show number 613 in the series. This session of the radio show shares my Talk Franklin conversation with our town administrator, Jamie Helen, and marketing communications specialist, Lily Rivera. We had our conversation via conference bridge to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. We talk about multiple topics, the Community Preservation Committee and two tours being scheduled, the 215 Prospect Street Chapter 61 process, Complete Streets, the Cultural Festival, and the upcoming Harvest Festival, the Housing Production Plan going before the Planning Board and then eventually to the Town Council, and then October 6th, the Town Council meeting will also be joint with the School Committee. Links to the key topics covered here are included in the show notes. The recording runs about 36 minutes, so let's listen to my conversation with Jamie and Lily. All right, Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, WFPR.FM anywhere on the internet, and 102.9 on the local Franklin area dial. Another Talk Franklin episode with our town administrator, Jamie Helen. Jamie, happy Friday.
Happy Friday, Steve. Beautiful rainy day. Nice and warm.
Beautiful rainy day.
Nice and warm.
The water.
I know, we haven't had enough of that all year.
Just enough. I mean, we'll might as well set a record while we're going to go at it, right?
I'm telling you, I've been joking, right? I think I've even joked on your show before that someday, and maybe our lifetime, maybe not, we'll be piping water from New York and New Jersey and Massachusetts and Maine and New England out to California.
Sure.
And it just, you sit there and you wonder, maybe that's not so far in the future. I mean, it's unbelievable how this weather has just consumed our region, and out there it's just the polar opposite. You know, it's unbelievable.
Yes. And more formally, for our marketing communication person, Lily, good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon.
So you're still getting your feet more than wet as you get getting acclimated into.
Yes. Yes, definitely. I've been doing a lot of reflecting and just absorbing, and I'm learning a lot. I'm loving a lot of it, and I'm just super excited for everything that I'm doing and working on and learning about what's going on in the town and all of that. So I'm doing good.
Good. Yeah. And actually, it's not on the agenda, but I recall, I think it was even a meeting last week, you ended up picking up on another item around branding, right? For the wayfinding and the branding evaluation and what we should do. And so that'll be a teaser for a future Economic Development Committee meeting.
Yes, absolutely. I think I'll be actually doing
spare time anyway, right?
Well, I think I am doing a quick update for the next Economic Development Subcommittee meeting. So that'll be something to look forward to as well. I think it is October 20th, I believe.
October 20th, yeah. Yep. So end of October. Yep.
There you go.
Good teaser. But in terms of at least catching up for this week, I thought we'd talk, Jamie, about the Community Preservation Committee meeting that was held on Tuesday. And a couple of key things came out of that. I think you gave an update on the 215 Prospect Street process, because the town was at least doing its land evaluation piece and turning it over to the owner.
We had a great CPC meeting this week. You know, I was very fortunate. We were lucky the committee decided to take the summer off and give everybody a little bit of a break after the busy spring that everybody had with the Maple Hill open space and recreation. We did a presentation on housing, which we'll talk about, I think, on another agenda item here, Steve, in a little bit. But I gave him a quick update, like the council gave a few weeks before, that the town did receive what's called a right of first refusal. It's not yet, but we were notified of a change of use in the tax status of 215 Prospect Street, which is the Schmidt property. And by statute, the town received it on August 23rd, and we had 30 days to get an appraisal done on our behalf. And we did deliver the appraisal within the 30-day period, which was just this past week. And from here, the owner has many choices, so we don't really quite know yet what the decision would be. You know, it's possible that the owner was just trying to see what the town's valuation of it was based on by right, and they may rescind the change of use. Or alternatively, if there is an alternative, if there is an alternative appraisal with different assumptions because of information that the landowner has, they are required by statute to provide an appraisal rebutting back to the town within 30 days, which would be October 23rd. And so obviously here we sit on the 24th of September. We have a, you know, 3 or 4 weeks left. So I would imagine we'll hear from the property owner right up against the deadline. Assuming that appraisal does come in at a different value, then there's a bit of a standstill where it does give the owner and the town the ability to at least communicate. This is different than many of the listeners out there that listen to the Maple Hill, where we were legally prohibited within that 120 days of talking anything to anybody.
Right.
Couldn't even see him in the grocery store type of stuff. It's like you were on jury duty. And so in this case, it gives us the ability to communicate. And then if there's no consensus somehow, then there the two appraisers actually hire a third appraiser to do a final third appraisal, which would be due 30 days from that date. And then depending on what that price came back to, the town still has 120 days to decide whether they want to exercise the right of first refusal. So this is a little bit more of a convoluted process. There are some more steps. This is a very rare process to undertake, Steve, in the land of Chapter 61s. So this isn't something that happens very often. So I think for the entire community at large, who's now coming to know more about these issues and land use issues, this will be a very educational process for everybody else. And of course, on this show, as well as many council meetings, you know, we'll continue to give updates from people.
In my 15 years of reporting, this is the first time this particular process has been used that I'm aware of. I do know the first refusal had been exercised, if I recall, at least twice prior. And the third time being the one we were actually in a position where, one, we had the funding, having been fiscally prudent and set ourselves up for it, and then actually executed for Maple Hill. So,
yep.
So, but
yeah, so it'll be interesting. And, you know, it's obviously a property that been a lot of rumors on for a lot of years and well before my time here. And so, you know, I tried to encourage everybody at the meetings to just, you know, please, you know, let's stick with the actual facts that are on the record. And you know, we, I think, will as a town be able to vet out the rumors that are out there and speculation and bring some transparency to it. So,
mm-hmm.
But again, you know, everything's been by the book thus far, and we'll see what the owner has for their decision on this next step.
Yep. Then the other piece within the Community Preservation Committee was a tease in regards to continuing kind of the historical side of the evaluation with the tour of Red Brick School and the Historical Museum. And I believe both of those are scheduled for next week.
Yep. September 29th, which I think folks will have access to this audio before that, Wednesday the 29th from 4 to 6. The agendas are being posted on the town website now. From 4 to 6, we will be at the Red Brick Schoolhouse, and then at 5 o'clock at the Franklin Historical Museum. And then on Friday, October 1st at 9 a.m., we will be at the Historical Museum because Mary Olson wants to serve coffee, which is great. Welcome everybody in. And then at 10 o'clock that day, we'll be at the Red Brick Schoolhouse. So a couple opportunities for folks to go into the building that maybe they haven't before. Again, the real primary purpose is to talk about some of the upcoming projects that the town would like to do using CPP funds for both of those buildings.
Yeah, and to refresh for the listeners who may not have picked that up or may be new to it, and we thank you for being new, but the Community Preservation Committee, formed earlier this year, has had a long series of kind of informational sessions across the variety of Community Preservation Act arenas. So this is the historical piece. We mentioned the housing. We're going to come back to that. But they had time and presentations on recreation and open space. So all in preparation for a plan. They've already got an initial budget, but while we've used some of the money to fund the Maple Hill purchase, there may be other things that we can fund, and that's going to be the purview of that committee to determine what that prioritization list is to then propose to the council and the council ultimately has the final approval on spending.
That's right.
Cool. And then you had an information session a couple of times, but then in a meeting with Zoom, et cetera, I participated on Wednesday for Complete Streets.
Complete Streets. It's a funny term. Streets are usually built complete, but what we're trying to get at here is more expansive, pedestrian-friendly ideas. I should probably call it a little bit different of a program, but really what this program's about, we, the town council this year passed a Complete Streets policy to begin a master plan, essentially, of pedestrian-friendly, bike lane, greenway connectivity projects, public safety projects throughout Franklin, trying to connect the green spaces throughout the community to kind of create our own emerald necklace of parks and trails, kind of like our own freedom trail, if you will, Steve, just for listeners to try to get a gauge of what we're talking about. It's really a freedom trail, connectivity of non-automobile ways to get around. Towns like Acton, Maynard, Holliston, even Hopkinton, Lexington, Arlington, there's some really great projects that have gone on across the state. And it's going to take 10, 20 years to build this all out. But a great case is Lincoln Street. We just rebuilt it, repaved it. Mm-hmm. And if we had had a Complete Streets policy in, you know, years ago, you know, we would have been able to build that out with a bike lane. Eventually the sidewalk and the and those amenities will come. Those were on the plan actually to go back and add those, but it's really about trying to think more broadly than just traffic counts. And Mike Maglia, our town engineer, and Brocata have done a great job putting that plan together. They're going to be submitting it next week. And it's not as if the plan's etched in stone, it continues to evolve year to year. So gives the town access to potential grant funding upwards near $500,000 a year. So we're trying to look at this as a way to get more state revenue to fix some of the areas in town where we think we can improve.
Yeah, and part of the juggle, I think, is to that point in terms of depends upon the funding, and clearly the state granting is a key piece of that. So depending upon how much they do give us, it may make more sense to do this or that and combine with whatever our other local prioritization is, because clearly over time, you and we've talked here as well, but every time the DPW tries to touch a street, they want to touch it and do it complete if they need to. So they do the water, sewer, rebuild, et cetera, et cetera. It won't necessarily do that for every street, but the Complete Street at least is more of a philosophical approach in how do we move people and traffic, right? As opposed to just focusing on the traffic. So,
yeah. And I think that, you know, I think for any interested resident that wants to dig a little deeper, if they just Googled Franklin DPW Complete Streets, going to the DPW website, we just started a webpage with the materials, and that'll be the one-stop shop for this type of project moving forward. So I hope there's more citizen engagement on some of this. You know, I got to say that the list of projects is great. We understand there's a demand out there for a lot more of these amenities. And so I think, you know, but obviously having more feedback from folks and interactiveness is great. And I'm sure as this gets going a little bit more and people are more familiar with it, we'll be getting more comments. So people can go visit that website and get all the materials up to date.
Yeah, and I think at least there's one thread that seems to have been a recurring thread on some of the Facebook pages. You know, when can we get a sidewalk on Washington Street? Well, that particular section actually is one of those projects that's on the list. So people.
Great point. I'm glad you dropped that. Also, I didn't have Mike do, but at some point we will, once this goes to the state, is we're going to put project cost estimates next to each one.
Mm-hmm.
Washington Street's been on our goals for years. We just need a revenue source to pay for it. And that's where Complete Streets comes in, where if we can augment state funding of $400,000 a year, that'll help help the rest of us be able to fund it here at the local level.
Certainly. Indeed. And then actually, so related to the Complete Streets, I think it was more of the shared streets piece. You used some of those fundings for the cultural festival when we closed Main Street.
Great point on the shared streets part, Steve. I mean, we We were able to, before Anne-Marie Tracy left, she got $21,000 to buy some Jersey barriers so that we could safely cordon off the streets. You know, this was the first round for the police and the DPW to see how they worked. Funny, in the fire chief, I mean, everybody was like, well, how long do they take to fill up? How do we drain them? How long does it take to drain them? Do you just let the water go down? You know, are they heavy? You know, so I mean, there's all these dynamics. So it was a really great guinea pig. And obviously, I unfortunately was unable to attend because I was on my way back from my kind of summer vacation, which was around Labor Day. So sadly, I wasn't able to attend, but Lily went, Julie in our office went, and a lot of bunch of the other staff went and said it was an excellent event. And I think there's obviously a great foundation to build off from. But, you know, Lily, I don't know if you have any thoughts. Seeing as how you were there, it might be a little bit better to explain how great the cultural festival was.
Oh, yeah. It was definitely the talk of, like, all the meetings the next day. We were talking about, like, it honestly just such a great event with, like, a robust programming. The food trucks were so good. I made a joke with some other people about how, you know, after waiting in line for what seems like a little bit of a while, I'm sure the food tasted even better, you know, once you got to it. Of course, it was good on its own before that, but it was great options. Great live music, some performances. I believe there was a Sari showcase. You know, it seems like it was engaging. The crowd was, you know, engaged in that and seemed to be having fun. It was great to see all, you know, the display of like all different saris and just the beautiful like the art, the artistry that just goes into creating those, you know, traditional pieces, and, you know, being able to share you know, different cultures with one another. It was just like beautiful to see, and seeing sort of riding on the theme of community unity, which was the theme for this year. And just seeing, you know, the community out and together, and just enjoying, you know, all the different artisans, all the different offerings. You know, there was I believe it was a puppeteer as well. There's a puppet showcase, yeah. You know, it was a kids' corner. There was the Grammy winning salsa band with the dance instruction from, I think it was a Rhode Island Latin dance, I believe.
Yeah.
Just the beer garden. There's just so much going on, and it was great to see, you know, everyone just there having a good time, and you really felt like the warmness, the warmth, at least that I got being there and seeing, you know, so many people together and, you know, having a good time and really reveling in the community feel.
Yeah, the weather certainly cooperated nicely. It was a gorgeous day. A lot of people came out, and I was there early and stayed through till almost to the very, very end. There was a packed crowd for up till, call it 3:30, when I think there was some other game thing happening on TV that some people started dissipating a little bit for. But for those who stayed and then took part of the dance lessons, and then the music from the salsa band was just, that was one of the high points for me, where you saw people with, you know, the team sports jerseys, people with saris, and others, you know, dancing to salsa and learning salsa. That that photo was cultural diversity right there. So, well worth it. And now we get another event coming up with the Harvest Festival.
October 2nd, was it noon to 6?
Noon to 6. Oh, yeah, it's either 5 or 6, but it starts at noon, yes.
It's till 5, yeah.
Until 5. Another great event. I really have few words to say about it. I think the event, largely, Steve, has spoken for itself. It's been a reoccurring part of fall in Franklin. And, you know, obviously looking forward to it. And, you know, after that, I have to say, the bummer is that it starts getting a little chillier. And obviously, some of the outdoor events from the town's behalf stop. But as we go to Harvest Festival, I just quickly want to reflect and thank all the incredible volunteers, the boards and committees. You know, I want to thank, you know, the Cultural District Committee, who kicked off the summer with a great art walk at a time when they didn't even know if they could have it.
Right.
You know, I thank Ryan and his staff for the concerts in the Common, and the great job Lauren and Roger have done up at the farmers market. to make those more experiential and destination events. You know, they really have upped the game with the concerts in the Common and the vision that we always had. Steve, we talked on the show many times years ago, with having the concerts in the Common and the farmers market on the same night on Fridays. You know, we are working to get more food trucks. It is not a Board of Health problem. It's not a fee problem.
Nope.
Franklin has to show the appetite and the love. And I think we saw that at the cultural festival this year. Great job by Kay Kelly and Lillian and all of their volunteers to put that together. And now we have Lisa Piana and the Downtown Partnership and Scott and Berta. Just a really great summer of free entertainment and events put on by nonprofits and town committees and boards and volunteers and staff. And I just want to thank them as we came out of this pandemic. We never had a major event, which was great. And people seem to really enjoy them. And how could I even forget the 4th of July committee as well to put on their back? Paul and Joe, you know, got their recognition at the council, but to do that in with such a tumultuous moment of like who, what, where, and how are we going to have to follow what regs, you know, to pull all that together and get something going was a tremendous effort from everybody in town. So hopefully everybody out there had a great summer, and just want to thank all the volunteers and all the boards and staff for their incredible effort.
Yeah, that's one of the key pieces that I think we've talked before. People think, well, Franklin does that. Well, Franklin as a community does it, but the town of Franklin, other than certainly the fire from a safety point, police from a traffic point, safety point. To your point, a lot of the other committees, all volunteer based, they're the ones that pull all these events together. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And speaking of committees, and back to our housing topic, the housing production plan is up for the planning board public hearing on Monday the 27th. So folks listening to this may catch that after the fact, but we'll be through other sources, certainly advertising, to make sure you get a crack at the planning board and the housing production plan. Cause once they do their thing, it does come back to the town council sometime, you know, in the near future.
Yep. I definitely anticipate a town council discussion on the matter of whether the planning board moves forward with it or not. You know, shout out to Brian Taberner and Amy Love and the staff. I mean, Brian put a tremendous amount of hard work, and you know, it's moments like these where you really the town should really value somebody who's as knowledgeable as him. You know, the chiefs and Brutus and, you know, technology and superintendents and, you know, schools always get top billing, but there's a lot of other staff that doing some incredible stuff. And for him to write a 100-page plan like that just shows these things are not easy. They really take skill and expertise, and he did a great job. I just want to remind everybody, this is not like the housing production plan is a plan. The town has not updated it in 10 years. And it's something the state looks at when they consider grant awards. It's something the state looks at for good faith. It's something that the towns, they encourage to get done every 10 years with your master plan, because demographics change, economics changes.
And you have the new census data roll into it.
You have the new census data, you know, things change and you need to update your housing production plan. It's not all affordable housing. There's obviously a focus on it. It doesn't mean that every strategy in it is going to be voted on and approved by the council and the planning board. It's just a roadmap to some strategies and ideas on how we can get our arms around what's going to be a big albatross for this community, which is housing costs. You've already seen it throughout the last 5 years. We're now looking at the average sale in town is well over $500,000. And people, for what they're getting for their money, you know, is obviously becoming less and less due to the overall cost. You know, smaller homes are going for obscene prices. And the truth of the matter is it's very, very difficult to permit and produce housing at any cost. Look at Maple Hill. You know, Steve, they were in the permitting process for a year and a half. It was pretty much soup to nuts a 2-year long process. And then their phase in of those units was to take place at a third over a decade. Mm. So when people say 57 houses, I think they think it's a Google search, and they pop up like Monopoly houses.
Yeah.
And we have to remember, this is a lot of risk for developers. There's financing involved with banks. There's credit related stuff. There's employment, there's contractor issues. There's a lot that goes into building housing, and especially high cost housing or affordable housing. And we have to continue to remain diligent and show the public and the state that we're continuing to try to have these discussions. The planning board is beginning their hearing on September 22nd on their version of the plan. The plan has been unanimously endorsed by the town's Economic Development Committee, and it is required to have an approved plan by the state. The planning board and the town council both have to approve it. But unlike other bylaw procedures, if the council wants to approve it and the planning board doesn't, that's up to them. It doesn't require the planning board to vote in order for the council to do this. And I say this because, Steve, as you know, as a longtime watcher of the meetings, you know, a couple of the councilors have certainly been asking about this over the last month or two. And I think there's a good reason to think that one of the two meetings in October, for sure, regardless of the planning board decision, the council will at least have a public discussion on this. It was one of the town council's goals for this legislative session. Yep. So I think many of them believe that there should at least be a debate on this before the election in November.
Yeah, and it's really part of the overall master planning cycle that you referred to too. And Chloe, the master plan, which is generally needed to be done every 10 years, and last one was 2013, so it'd be 2023. This is a key component into that, as I believe there's an open space plan, there's a recreation plan. Those are all additional components of that master plan, so to speak. So absolutely, all steps to it. And yeah, given the overall workload and the details that are required, you can't do all of this at once anyway. It's just physically impossible.
It is impossible. But funny, Steve, is we are. Why do I say that? We did the housing production plan. It's now, whether it's approved or not by the state, mm-hmm. at some point, the new council and planning board are going to have to debate it as well.
Right.
In the new year. We have the zoning diagnostics of downtown commercial, including residential and density, height, setbacks, everything in C1 and downtown commercial. And the master plan process update is just around the corner in a year and a half of getting that started. So for anybody out there that's interested in downtown revitalization, local land use, housing production, Steve, in your experience, this has got to be the moment people come out. Right. Yeah. If you're interested in those topics, now's the time to get engaged.
Right.
In where there's certainly going to be some decisions being made on the next decade of Franklin and what we're trying to do here. I think you would agree. We don't talk about this all the time, but for those interested listeners out there, this is the moment to get involved.
Yeah. From a housing development perspective, Chloe, this is the time to do some reading and be mm-hmm. prepared. When you come to, whether it's the planning board, town council, economic development, one of the meetings, and participate, you know, really participate, be prepared with some questions and answers from mm-hmm. what you've read, and bring some ideas. Because ideas are absolutely needed. There's no corner on ideas in your office or in your building.
Yeah. And just even if people have feelings. You know, they just have a vision, you know, hey, why can't we be like Davis Square, or mm-hmm. why can't we be like, you know, Hudson, I hear about all the time. Or,
right.
You know, why look at what Medway is doing around the corner. Or look what's going on over here. Even if they're, mm-hmm. I went on vacation somewhere and this was really fun, you know, mm-hmm. Just even those experiences that people want and have, I think are really, really valuable.
Yeah. How could we do it here? Absolutely. It's a good question. Good start to a discussion. Then I think you also wanted to tease about the October 6th town council meeting, the 1st of October. Obviously, they may have a bunch of things on that agenda as opposed to the housing plan maybe on the second one. But
some of your listeners may not remember this, but Steve, you will. Back at the budget hearings in May, we had a little bit of debate about school finance on the second night of the budget hearings. And I think both the superintendent and I both thought that that was a positive step to engage the community in school finance discussion. And I it was kind of a commitment made that in the fall, the school department, as well as the town administration, would at least engage a short presentation in the overall talking points of the status of school finance. And we would have that at a council meeting, and the school committee would hopefully attend. And so we're going to have that debate and discussion on October 6th. So they will be in. In addition, we will be talking about Davis Thayer, which has been a popular topic from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think more globally, it's an opportunity for the school department to talk about their future school master facilities plan analysis and where they see school facilities being here over the next 10 years or 9 years. And so it should be a great discussion to have the school department and the council all in the same room and having a public discussion about these issues, and hope that many listeners out there will at least listen in. I'm sure we'll be doing a synopsis of it at some point on this show, Steve, but you know, I think hopefully people will participate in that one, or at least listen in on Zoom. And just hear the debate about where everybody stands on this and what the facts are and where the town needs to go.
Yeah, I would encourage certainly for the listeners to pay attention both to this snapshot as well as my town council quarterback session with Tom Mercer. But clearly, I think the detail is going to be such in that meeting. Listen to the full meeting. Yes. Prepare with the agendas and the associated docs, because the budget and the prioritization, Davis Thayer as a building will be coming to the town at some point in time. We'll find out about the update in that timeline. And then the school committee has to figure out what they're going to do for their long-term plan, to your point. They've talked of it, but I don't know that they've set a schedule for that yet. So we may get the teaser as to what that's going to look like. And
really important too, to engage the town council in all this. I mean, ultimately, buildings are under our purview.
Correct.
Debt exclusions, if you need them, are on the council's purview. Mm-hmm. There needs to be a collaboration between us on these things, and think of it more as an entity that's all working together, as opposed to will they feel one way, they feel another. I think that's not going to get the progress that people in the community are looking for. And there are other competing demands, right? I mean, there's a police station, and there's the DPW financial issues, which we'll also have later on this fall when Brutus comes in to do his biannual snow presentation.
Mm-hmm. And stormwater is still hanging out there.
Stormwater is still hanging over there, which really be the big part. And also, for the first time, I should also mention, it's likely on October 6th, for the first time, I'm going to put a layout of something that not one single person in Franklin has asked me about, not even you, Steve.
Mm.
What is the town receiving for ARPA funds from the federal government as part of the federal stimulus? So I'm going to give a very brief overview, because it's going to be a very limited plan right now, because I think, as we all know, one, the money will go to 2024, but more importantly, you know, as we go into winter here past Halloween, you know, I think there is some hesitancy and to make sure that the town has appropriate funds in case somehow this variant or the COVID situation just continues on and we need to do booster clinics, or, you know, we need to do more vaccination clinics, more outreach, et cetera, whatever that entails. So, you know, so that'll also be there happening that night. And so it'll be a meeting chock full of a lot of information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then the only other piece, as of thinking through the lines in the October meeting, et cetera, somebody may say, well, how come the school committee hasn't started the piece earlier? Well, the study specifically for a long-term plan is going to take some time. And oh, by the way, there's a November election that potentially could replace both school committee and town council. And since, to your point, both of them should be involved, that would likely happen with whoever's going to be on the deck going forward.
Yeah, it's just to close out, it we're also, we have other things we're doing that we're trying to maintain. The superintendent's trying to get kids back into school, didn't know what was going on with masks. You know, unfortunately, that just sucks up so many hours and whatnot. And, you know, we meet once a month in the summer. You know, I think the school committee does as well. And, you know, there's only so much meeting space for so much, you know, where these meetings also, you know, we want all the engagement, we want citizens to come out and comment, but then also it becomes the exhaustive factor for just human beings that are there until 10, 11, 12 at night,
right?
You know, once or twice a week, it's just not fully sustainable for everybody to do. So we have to think through, I think, part of this conversation is going to be how do we interact with everybody on these large scale conversations in the community? It can't just all be at 8:30 p.m. on Tuesdays or Wednesdays,
right?
For marathon meetings, you know, a few of those are fine, but as a systematic practice, you're going to burn people out because we just have so many other things going on. So again, even if I think one of the best parts of this last year is Zoom, I've seen so many people on mm-hmm. with their earbuds in while they're washing dishes, doing the treadmill, sitting on the couch, watching a movie even.
Right.
And it's great to see people to tune into that stuff and be able to listen in. And I think that the amount of feedback I get is people are watching on Franklin TV a lot.
Sure.
Live on those evenings, on those shows,
yeah,
which is also great. People tell me almost on a daily basis, oh, you know, over on the meeting, I was watching on TV.
Mm-hmm.
I think it shows the power of where Franklin TV is going. And so I think there is a lot more engagement out there.
Yeah, there is, which the engagement should also spark, you know, appearance in the election process, whether mm-hmm. early voting, voting by mail, absentee ballot, or in person on November 2nd.
Yeah.
Because while this is a local election, historically, we've only had 20% turnout thereabouts over the years. Ideally, with the mail by vote, vote by mail, rather, I'm hopeful that we'll get, you know, significantly above that. I'm not a betting man. I prefer to report as to what happens as opposed to forecasting, but I hope we have a decent turnout because that'll help both the school committee, town council, and all the other boards because they'll have a better, they should be getting a better choice of people going forward.
Couldn't agree more, Steve. And, you know, there's already a few hundred people that have signed up for mail-in balloting. I believe the clerk will also be sending something out shortly,
mm-hmm.
if not today. And so there will be a engagement piece on that. So absolutely.
Indeed. Well, I think that covers the key topics for this time, but we'll be back at again in another couple of weeks and with more to talk Franklin. So Jamie, thank you. Lily, thank you. And until next time, listeners, thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.